And he was pretty hungry too. He hadn't had anything to eat for quite some time. And they talked to him. They said, "You know, we don't really have much to offer you." And he said, "That's okay. You know, I can do a little bit of magic." And they said, "Really? Can you make it rain?" No, I can't make it rain. But I have here," and he picked up a rock. "I have a magical rock." And they said, "Really? What does it do?" He said, "Well, if I get a large, large pot of water and I put this rock in the water, then I can make a magical soup out of it that'll feed everybody. It's delicious, I promise you." And so they said, "Why not? We have nothing to lose. Let's give it a shot." And so they got the largest pot they could find in the little town, filled it with water, and he said a little something and put this rock in the soup and started stirring, had it over a fire. People kept asking him, they said, "Is it ready yet?" And he said, "Well, let's see." And he put his finger in and he tasted it and he said, "It's pretty good, but you know what would make it better is a little soury. Does anybody have a little soury?" And so they said, "No." "Oh, yes, I do. I've got a little bit." And so the person ran off and got it and put it in the pot. And each time they'd come back and say, "Is it ready?" And he'd say, "No, you know, potatoes would make it better, though. Does anybody have..." "Oh, yeah, I've got potatoes." And this went on and on until each person in the village had contributed a little bit of what they had. Not enough for themselves, but they had it nonetheless. And then finally he said, "You know, I think it's finished. I think this stone has done its magic." And they all shared in the soup, and they all were fed. Now, I'm sure a lot of people have heard this story before. It's the stone soup story. But it's very appropriate for today's message. It's about sharing. It's about the life-affirming work that can be done when we all come together and we all contribute a little bit of whatever we have, be it food, be it time, be it energy, our love. Each one of those things together can add up to something that's much bigger than all of its separate parts. We've heard about our story from 1 Kings about the prophet Elijah, who is directed by God to go on many parts of his various ministry. And this part of his ministry, God directs him to go to this town and to ask for food and water. And it's kind of a funny story because at first Elijah does seem a bit rude. I mean, I could just imagine working hard, gathering up wood, and this person comes into town, a stranger, and says, "Could you get me some water?" And at first I would say, "Well, okay, I'll probably get you some water." And then the person said, "Oh, and could you get me some food while you're at it?" I don't think that would go over too well in most places. But then again, it was a culture of hospitality back then. And so perhaps that was expected. Now, this woman doesn't really have much. The passage really proves that she doesn't have much because it talks about how she's gathering wood for the last meal for her and her son. Not only is it scarcity, but it's the ultimate scarcity. The type of scarcity where it doesn't even really matter because we're all going to pass away from not having enough to sustain us. But Elijah asks nonetheless. Elijah asks this woman to believe in God. And she doesn't really quite believe him yet. And we know this because in the story, after her son is resurrected, then she says, "Now I know that you are a man of God." So before then, she's a little hesitant. But she says, "Why not?" And so she does. She gives a bit to Elijah, and somehow God makes the oil and a little bit of flour last long enough to feed her and her son and Elijah until the crops begin to grow again. It's very much like the stone soup. Now, at the end, we have this bit about her son passing away. And she is very distraught. Elijah is very distraught. Elijah says to God, "Why have you let this woman pass away? This woman's son pass away?" And so he asks God. He throws his body over him three times. Somebody joked in Bible study this morning, perhaps he was trying CPR. But a miraculous thing happens, and the son is raised from the dead. Now, our passage from Luke also has a story about a widow and her son being dead, and this time Jesus comes and resurrects the son. And this, of course, is paired with our First King passage in the lectionary, because both deal with this type of resurrection. Something to understand about both stories, however, is that really there's a lot more going on than just the death of a loved one. That is bad enough, but in both of these cases, these are widows and their only children have passed away. And something that you have to understand is during that time and that society, a woman who was a widow, her only really chance of being cared for was through her children, particularly her sons. And so once the sons had deceased, that was it. She would be left on her own, destitute, with no one else to care for her. It's why in the Old Testament we talk about caring for the widow and the orphan, because the widow by herself, with no one else, was just about as destitute as an orphan. And so not only have these women lost their children, but these women have also thus lost all that they've had in the process. These are very troubling times. And in both cases, first with Elijah and then with Jesus, God intercedes. The miraculous happens. They are brought back to life. And these women not only have their children, but have a future as well. These are very intense stories of life-affirming actions. Speaking of which, does anyone know what today is? I mean, besides being Sunday and besides being VBS, does anybody know what is special about today?
D-Day.
Well, that too, but I wasn't thinking that one. Does anybody else know what today is? Today is National Cancer Survivor Day. It's been going on for about 26 years, I think, and it is a day in which we are to remember those who have struggled and survived, and those that who have lived cancer, through cancer can remember what they have done and celebrate it. It's a very difficult thing. I've not had cancer. I know many people that have. My grandfather passed away from melanoma before I was ever born. My grandmother had cancer, survived through it. We don't have to look far in this church to find somebody. Unfortunately, especially right now, there are many cases of cancer with people in the church and loved ones that we know. It is a horribly difficult disease to struggle through. I have met people. I have counseled some people that have gone through cancer treatments. I know that it is a horribly demoralizing thing. Often parts of your body are taken away. You are given poison or given radiation to try and heal you. Your energy is zapped from you, and you wonder if you'll be able to make it. You wonder if you really will come through on the other end. It is almost like a widow who has lost her child. It is a very difficult path. And you have no guarantees. You do not know if all of this fighting, if all of this suffering, if all of this loss of appetite and energy and upset stomachs and ulcers and hair falling out, you do not know if that is going to leave you with life. And so you have to have faith. You have to think that somehow you can make it through this horrible disease, that somehow on the other end there is a better life. And you see, this is what Jesus teaches us. Jesus comes to the scene of a dead boy. And he asks, the people, do not cry. It's as if he doesn't understand what's going on. It's as if he has an alternate view of reality. It's not as if he comes and he says, you know, this is a horrible thing that's happened. This is so sad. Let me see what I can do. Maybe I can make it better. No, he steps into a funeral procession. Somebody he doesn't even know, and just announces, don't cry. People must have thought he was crazy. Well, who are you to tell me not to cry? This is a horrible thing that's happened. Who do you think you are? And he just walks over to the coffin and he says, boy, get up. And he does. Such a wonderful place that Jesus lives in. I don't know if I have attained it ever, but it certainly is different from the reality that most of us see. It's a life-affirming reality. It's a reality in which a little bit of oil and flour can sustain people for several days. It's a reality in which death does not occur. And I believe that somewhere close to that reality is where people end up when they fight cancer. Stories that I've heard from survivors involve finding things out about themselves that they never knew, finding that they had strength that they never knew, finding that things that they thought were important weren't, and they realized what was truly wonderful about their lives. You see, in the process of coming through that difficult disease, they have come closer to that place where Jesus is, where they realize what is important, what is right in the world, what is worth living for, the strength that they have through themselves and through God and through Christ. It's a horrible thing, but it can teach us something. Even those of us who do not suffer the disease should take a lesson from people who go through it. We should all think about what we have in our life that's good. We shouldn't be so concerned about the scarcities, about do I have enough of this? Do I have enough money? Do I have enough house? Do I have enough of X, Y, and Z? We should know that what is truly important, we do have. God provides for us. The people that we have in our lives are more important. The life that we are given, each and every day we can wake up and take another breath, is more important than any of those things. And if we ask somebody who had struggled through cancer and survived, they would probably tell us that. It's an important lesson. An important lesson from the Bible, an important lesson to be learned on this day. And I invite each one of you to remember that. I invite each one of you to not focus on what is absent, but to focus on what we have. To focus on the fact that together we have so much strength. That together we can overcome great difficulties. That God lives in an alternate reality that is life-affirming, and even when things seem like they are so difficult, even when things seem like they are so impossible, somehow God can see us through to the other end. I invite you to try and experience that reality. Try to look for it. It's there. Jesus is there. Jesus is still saying, don't cry. Jesus is still saying, get up, boy. We only have to listen. If we listen and we follow, we will find that place, no matter how dark the valley. Amen.